Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Wealth Studying Podcast. I'm John Pugliano. I'm the money manager and founder of InvestableWealth.com. Today, we're continuing our 10-part series discussing the wealth-building principles. And in this podcast, we're going to be talking about wealth-building principle number 4, which is identify value. Now, when it comes to building wealth, it's critical to be able to identify value. Now, being able to identify value is a sign of maturity. Think of a child. They don't have a concept of value. If they want a candy bar or a toy, they don't realize whether it's worth a dollar or $100, right? The concept of $1,000 or $1,000,000, it has no bearing or understanding to a child. So when we talk about value, like many things, when we talk about building wealth, it really comes down to maturity. I think it's pretty safe to say that generally people that are financially independent are people that are very mature, people that have a great deal of wisdom. And that's the skill you're trying to develop as you work through these wealth-building principles. So when you think about value, what comes to mind? Well, it's something of worth, right? It's something that has utility or a usefulness. Now, since this podcast is about building wealth and about money, you would naturally probably jump to the conclusion that when we talk about value, we're going to be talking about how to value a stock. And that's definitely something we'll talk about in this episode and will be a key part of ongoing episodes as we look at specific stocks and companies that are in the news and what their valuation is and whether it's a good price or not. But actually, in this episode, I'm going to talk about valuing stocks last. I'm going to talk about a couple other areas of identifying value that I think are more important and more critical to your ability to build wealth. Now, the first of those areas that I want you to think about when it comes to being able to value wealth and improve your ability to do that is with people. Now, when I talk about valuing individuals and people, I don't mean valuing them to look at someone and say, hey, what worth are they to me? What can I get out of them? You know, that's very opportunistic, and that's not what I'm talking about at all. What I'm talking about is being able to see someone's character. And I say to be able to see someone's character because for the most part, someone with a bad character isn't going to reveal it to you. First of all, someone with a bad character may not even know that they don't have a good character. They either may be deluding themselves or they're so ignorant of social skills that they don't even know that they're lacking in character. Now, let's just assume you meet a criminal. This is someone that intends to rob you or defraud you, somehow steal from you. They're not going to come out and tell you that's what they're going to do, right? So you're going to have to be able to judge their character, to find out if they're lying, to find out if they're stealing. So when you meet a new person, regardless of whether they're trying to hide their character or whether they just don't know what their character is, you need to be able to make that value judgment, right? And that's why we call it a value judgment. You need to be able to determine, is this person trustworthy? Is this person someone that I want to establish a relationship with? Have you ever thought about it in this way? You know, you come in contact with people all the time. You're surrounded by your friends and family. But something you might not have thought about is the only people that you don't get to choose are your parents and your children, right? You were born to your parents. You didn't ask for them. You just arrived. And when you have children, you might have asked for children, but you don't get to pick which kind you want. So you're kind of stuck with your parents and you're stuck with your children. And particularly with your children, you need to take responsibility for them. But everybody else in this world is a choice for you. You get to choose what type of relationship you want to have with them, right? Your parents, you have to love and honor them. Your children, you have to love and take responsibility for. But you're not necessarily stuck with anybody else like you are with those direct relatives, right? Even your spouse. Now, you chose your spouse. And you know when choosing a spouse, being able to determine character is a key and critical factor. The same thing with your friends. When you're choosing your friends, you're really revealing your own character, right? You're choosing to associate with people that are ultimately like you or people that you want to be like. It's been said if you want to see what your future looks like, look at your friends. And again, that's because it comes back to character. So the reason it's so crucial to be able to identify value in people or to judge their character is because of the relationships you're going to have with them, whether they're going to be positive or negative, whether they're going to be loving and fulfilling, or whether they're going to be draining and codependent. Now, some people may say, hey, talking about choosing a spouse or choosing your friends, that's not really related to wealth or business. I would totally disagree. One of the singular, most important key decisions you're going to make in this life is who is your spouse, and then the second decision is who are your friends. And they have an incredible impact, not only on your wealth and your net worth, but on your happiness and your future. Now I'll let you think about that and draw your own conclusions. It's not only important to consider the value and the character of those immediately around you, your spouse and your friends, but also the people you're going to be working with, right? Whether it's a future business partner that you're going to have, or maybe you're going to be hiring employees, or even if you don't ever intend to become an entrepreneur, it's important that you know how to choose the right employer and that you go to work at a company that has the kind of coworkers that you want to be associated with. Now, a key mistake that people make when they're looking for a new job, they're always focused on what they can do to impress the prospective employer. They're always thinking about how do they make their resume look, or how do they dress for the interview, or how should they answer questions. And that's obviously important, but it's also extremely important that you're evaluating your future employer, that you're evaluating the company that you want to work for. Is it going to provide you with growth opportunities? Is it going to provide you with adequate compensation? Is it going to put you in touch with people that you can help build your network? Is it a healthy work environment? Is this a place where you can grow and be nurtured and meet other similar people like yourself? Again, this is why it's so critical for you to be able to understand and judge people's character. The worst thing you can do is enter into a business relationship with a business partner that has fraudulent intentions, or to work for an employer or employees that either skirt the law or just have bad ethics. You don't want to be associated with those people. Now let's go on to the next topic that we want to be able to identify value in, and that's opportunity. We've talked about being able to see people as they really are. You need to be able to assess opportunities and determine whether they're good or whether they're bad. Now, when we first come upon an opportunity, just like when we first come upon a person, we bring biases, we bring prejudices. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Our biases and our prejudices are really just accumulation of the knowledge and the wisdom that we've built up through life. When you see a hot stove, you have a bias because of past experiences in your life that the metal on that stove will probably be hot, and if you touch it, you'll get burned. So we don't want to rule out our prejudices and our biases unless they're based on improper information or unless the situation has changed and our past experiences can no longer be applied to these new future situations. Now again, when you come upon a new opportunity, it's like coming upon a new person. And if you don't separate your emotions from your logical biases and prejudices, you can start drawing improper conclusions. You may come upon a new opportunity and it's exciting and you think it's an opportunity to make a lot of money. And you have blinders on, and you're not seeing the warning signs. You're not seeing the red flags. You're not realizing that the person that's pitching it to you want a bad character. You're not realizing that the land that you think is a great opportunity is actually swamp land in Florida. Because you want to be successful, because you want to prosper, you're willing to overlook these warning signs that should be apparent to you. And that's because your emotions are getting in the way. As much as we can, we want to strip away the emotion, and we want to just deal with the logic and the reasoning. Now again, this may be with a specific business deal. This may be like you're looking or assessing to buy a new company, that you're looking to get into business with a new partner, that you're looking to buy a piece of real estate. But it could also apply to you as an employee. Again, when you're looking at taking that new job somewhere, you've already assessed the people, but now look at the actual employment opportunities. Is it geographically in the right location? Is it a reasonable commute from where you live? Is it a safe work environment? Is the compensation that they're telling you you're going to receive, is that really realistic? Are you really going to get that bonus? Is the company financially sound, and are they going to be able to weather the next downturn in the economy? Or are you going to be the first one they lay off? You have to be able to, again, strip away those emotional responses and focus on the black and white facts. Apply logic and reasoning and look at that opportunity. List the pros and list the cons. Weigh each one out. Determine what's important to you. Again, what has value. Determine which of those pros and cons are just noise. They're irrelevant. And then come to the final conclusion of, is this really a good opportunity or not? You'd use the same process whenever I talk of opportunities. I'm just not talking about business deals or employment situations. I'm also talking about things like education. And when it comes to education, it may not just be your own particular education, but helping your child or your grandchild or someone you know, someone that you're mentoring, helping them decide on what type of education they should be receiving. Is the brand name of that university really worth the money they're charging for it? Are the 4 years of opportunity cost or 5 or 6 years of opportunity cost that you're going to be sitting in that classroom, is that really worth it? What's the real opportunity? Are you better off going to a local community college for 2 years to knock out your basic educational requirements and then transferring on to a better brand named university? Again, this is all part of learning how to value an opportunity. And this can also and should also be done in your individual personal life. For a vacation, for example, before you go on a vacation, assess the opportunity of it. Is this really the place I want to go to? Is this really going to make me feel refreshed and renewed? Is this vacation really worth the money I'm spending on it? What do you want that vacation to provide for you? Do you just want a distraction? Do you want to go someplace where you can relax and rest? Do you want to go someplace where you can meet new people? Do you prefer to go someplace where you can spend time with old friends or with relatives? Determine what you really want out of that vacation, and then again, take the emotion out of it, go back to the black and white facts and say, am I going to get what I really want out of this vacation? Now, the next likely place that would want to be able to improve our ability to judge the value of is on property. And naturally, we're going to think of property in terms of real estate, like our home or an investment property. Now, in particular, when you're dealing with your home or your own residence, there's going to be a great deal of emotion in there. And just like we talked about with the opportunity or when assessing people, you have to remove the emotion. Take the emotion out of it. When you're looking at buying a new house, you drive up, the place has great curb appeal, you fall in love with it. You love the open family room, or you love the big kitchen, or you love the fantastic workshop in the garage. That's keying in on a particular emotion, something you like, maybe a hobby or something that gets you very excited. But step back and really think about it. Is this really the house you want? Is this really the particular property you want? How is this property going to change over time? Is the area going to become congested with traffic? Are there changing demographics of the neighborhood? Are the local politics or the school board or the school boundaries changing? All that can have a drastic effect on not only your quality of life, but the value of your property. So once again, you have to look at the pros and cons of this property, determine if it has what you want, and if it doesn't, are these things easily changed, right? Is this just noise? Is it just static? Or is this a major problem or a major setback that can't be corrected? If there's not enough open space in the home, maybe you can knock out a wall, right? As long as it's not a load-bearing wall, that's easy to do, doesn't cost a lot of money. If the kitchen or the bathrooms are a little old or dated, hey, not a problem. They can be upgraded, right? It's going to cost money, but it can be upgraded. It can be solved. You can put in new countertops. You can put in a new sink. But if you're buying a piece of property and you really want, say, a treed lot, and there's no trees on your lot, well, obviously it's going to take 10 or 20 or maybe 15 years to grow some trees on your property. So if shade trees or fruit trees are really important to you and your lot doesn't have any, that can be a problem, right? You can change the grass. You can easily put in sod, small little annuals or perennials. Once again, it's just a matter of hiring a landscape company or putting it in yourself. It's just a matter of money. That can be taken care of. But a 30-year-old oak tree or a 15-year-old producing apple tree, that isn't easily solved. So again, take the emotion out of it. Look at the property for what it is. Is it fairly assessed? And then ask yourself, what's the future value going to be? How is things going to change over time? Is the property on the beach and it's eroding, and in 15 years my backyard's going to wash away? Is it a lakefront property where you're sitting on a reservoir that's being overutilized by the community, and every year the water level of the lake drops, and so in 15 years you're going to be 25 feet from the beach instead of sitting right on it? Is your boat dock going to be just in dry land? These are realistic things. Look at people that have problems with their real estate. And they say, well, I would have never thought this would have happened. Well, logically, maybe 10 or 15 years before, if you had thought about it, you would have seen that nice little street that you're on changes drastically because property on the other side of the street was commercial and a Walmart came in and bought it out. Like all things, it's not so much the present value that's hard to determine. It's the future value. That's very critical with property and real estate. Now, let's finish up with where most of you probably thought we were going to start with, and that's the valuation of stocks. If you're going to be investing in the stock market, the key thing to your success will be your ability to be able to put an accurate valuation on a stock. And why is that so difficult? Well, valuing a stock is just like judging a person's character, valuing the opportunity, or placing a value on the opportunity of a business deal, or placing the value on a property. And the reason is because a bad stock doesn't jump out and tell you, I'm a bad stock, don't buy me. The management and the executives of an unreputable company will do everything in their power to obscure the truth. They'll use every legal method they can to engineer their balance sheet so that their earnings look better than they are, so that their cash flow looks higher than it is, so that their liquidity looks better than it is, so that their debt looks smaller than it actually is. And when I say they'll use all legal methods, of course, we also know many of these people will stoop to fraudulent practices, and they won't even care about legal considerations. They will They will use fraud and out-and-out lies. And you can forget about the Securities and Exchange Commission or the Better Business Bureau or anybody else. No one's going to protect you. If you buy a bad stock, you will suffer the consequences. So one of the fundamental analysis for valuing a stock is what we'd call a P/E ratio, a price-to-earnings ratio. That's where we take the current selling price of the stock, we divide it by the earnings, and then that ratio gives us some idea of its present value. If the stock is currently making $1 a share, it's trading for $20 a share, you know that that stock has a price-per-earnings ratio of 20 times. You can then go to other stocks that are in that same industry, and you can determine whether or not a 20 times PE is a good deal or a bad deal, just like you would do with a house. When you go buy a piece of real estate, you walk up to a property and they're asking $300,000 for it. You would do comps on neighboring houses around that area to determine whether $300,000 is a good market price. That's the same thing you're going to do with a stock. A high growth stock is going to have a larger PE than a mature company. A stable company in a stable industry is going to have a higher PE than a smaller company in an uncertain industry. And that's because of the premium you're putting on it. The PE is really talking about the premium. How much more are you willing to pay for the quality of it? Again, think of it as a brand. If you walk into a store and you're going to buy some type of a beverage, a soft drink, you look up on the shelf and you see Coca-Cola, you see Pepsi, you see 7-Up, and then you see a brand that you've never heard of, or it's the local store brand. Well, generally, those brands that you've heard of are going to cost more than the store brand because you're paying a premium. You're paying a premium for the supposed perceived quality of that brand. Coca-Cola is going to sell for more than Fred's Discount Soda. Stocks would be valuated in a similar way. Now, where it gets tricky is, like I mentioned before, unscrupulous people will do everything they can to obscure reality. And I guess you can say that's true of all human nature, not just unscrupulous people. And so when you look at that price per earnings ratio, the price is always easy to determine because you know what the price of the stock is. What's harder to determine is that earnings, the denominator side of that ratio. What are really the true earnings? Is this reported earnings? Is this operated earnings? Is this earnings that exclude a one-time charge? Is this supposedly one-time charge that's being excluded, not really a one-time charge? It's a reoccurring problem that management's trying to hide. Have they shifted sales into this quarter to make it look good, but next quarter is going to suffer? Or likewise, have they postponed expenses into next quarter that should really be reported this quarter? There are all types of schemes and gimmicks and balance sheet engineering. When I was a little kid, I used to laugh at the older people that used the word shenanigan. But now I guess that I've gotten older, maybe that I've gotten a little bit wiser, I like the word shenanigan. A shenanigan is a mischievous trick, and I think that's about the best way to describe these things that we see on Wall Street. They're balance sheet shenanigans. They're mischievous little things that are designed to trip you up, to take your money from you. Now, they're not necessarily illegal, but in many cases they are unethical. Either way, if it's distorting your perception of the value and it's causing you to pay more for the stock than it's worth, it doesn't matter if it's illegal or unethical. What matters is that it's taking money out of your pocket. And so you want to do everything you can to identify that up front so you don't lose money on a deal. One popular method that's been used throughout the recovery since the Great Recession of 2008-2009 is stock buyback programs. Now, buybacks have always been around in it. And in the past, they've actually, in many ways, helped shareholders' equity. Today, I would argue that's not necessarily the case, and this is more of a balance sheet shenanigan. And this is rampant throughout the industry. They're a good example of a company that has had flat or reduced top-line revenue, that's sales. Their sales have been going down or been staying flat for years, decades. But the management of the company wants to make it look like they're growing their earnings. So they go in and they buy back their stock. They take shares off the market. And remember, these earnings are evaluated on a price per earnings on a share basis. So if your earnings are flat or declining, but you reduce the number of shares that are publicly traded, it can make it look like your earnings are either stable or growing when they're not. These shenanigans are important for you to be able to identify and to see through. And again, they get back to the reason we're talking about the fourth wealth building principle of being able to identify value. You have to not only see present value, but particularly with stocks, you need to be able to understand what's the future value. Because the price of that stock is based more on the future value than it's based on the current value. Now, the problem with that, again, is none of us are fortune tellers, so how do we determine what the future value is going to be? It's a whole lot easier to look at that house in that neighborhood and determine what the trees are going to look like or what the traffic patterns are going to be in 20 years than it is to look at a stock and understand where that stock's going to be in 20 years. Is technology going to change its product offering? Are the people that fill the management position still going to be there in 20 years? Are new competitors going to enter the market and take away their market share? Are consumers going to be fickle and they're not going to be interested in the products that this company offers in 20 years? These are all things that are extremely hard to determine, but that's exactly what the current price is based on. It's based on the perception of future earnings. So let's look at a couple ways that we can try and help ourselves determine if the stock is fairly priced and if those future earnings that are being projected are realistic. The first thing we want to do is start, again, like we did with everything, the black and white reality. What are the facts? Take the emotion out of it and let's just look at the logic. What are the real earnings today? What has the company earned in the last 12 months? This is particularly important when you're looking at something like a penny stock. Now, penny stock doesn't necessarily mean it trades for just a penny, but it generally means that it trades for probably under $10. The most important thing that identifies a penny stock, though, is that generally they have no earnings. You'll see a lot of biotech companies that fall in this category and some other high-tech companies. You can remember the dot-com bubble of the late 1990s and 2000 of all those technology companies. They all had a story, but they had no earnings. And so when we look at a stock, we want to make sure it's not a penny stock. We want to make sure that it has some type of earnings history. What's it been making over the last 12 months? What's it been making over the last 3 years? What has it made over the last decade? Now, obviously, past earnings are not going to guarantee future returns, but at least you're going to be able to see if the management that's in place has been able to adequately utilize the resources that they have, if they're getting a good return on investment, if consumers like this product and they're actually buying it and they like it enough that the company's able to make a profit. That's what the past earnings are going to tell you. Stay away from penny stocks that have a big story and no earnings. Because again, we're taking the emotion out of it. We don't care about the story. We don't care about how supposedly great this opportunity is. We want to make sure that in 12 months it's going to be making money, because that's what today's price is based on. So what I like to look at when I evaluate a stock is, once I've looked at the past earnings, again, like the past 12 months, the past 3 or 5 years, I want to look for consistency there. And then I want to look at what the future earnings are. What are the future earnings forecasted? Now, the future earnings forecast is going to tell you a lot about the stock, is going to tell you a lot about the price of that stock. Because if the future earnings forecasted are not growing, if they're not showing any growth, then you can be sure that the price of that stock is going to decline. Investors are not going to put a high premium on a stock today knowing that their earnings are going to go down in the future, right? You wouldn't do that. You wouldn't buy a home today for $300,000 if you thought that in 5 years it was only going to be worth $150,000. Well, that's the same way with the stock. Not only do you want it to preserve its earnings for today, but you want it to be growing at 5, 6, 7%, maybe double digits. It all depends on what the actual inflation rate and what the growth of the overall economy is. So we can't nail down a specific number in this podcast. But you want to see the future earnings of that stock projected and forecasted to be growing at or above the current market conditions. Now, this comes all the way back to what we started about, talking about people with their character and their integrity, because you're basing those future earnings and those forecasts on the integrity of the rating agency or of the analyst or of the executives and management of that company to be providing you with information that's accurate. And that's why you have to be a good judge of character. That's why you have to do your homework. That's why you have to be a skeptical person. Because believe me, there are people that are out there that are doing everything they can to defraud you, to obscure the truth, and to make companies look like they have value when they don't. Every speculative bubble that has ever occurred has always occurred because people believed in unrealistic growth expectations. Eventually, the truth always comes out, the bubble bursts, and if you invested in that, you're stuck with an asset that's declined at least 80% in value, if it's worth anything at all. Now, from a wealth-building standpoint, I think what you want to key in on when you're determining the valuation of a stock, what are those future earnings? What are they projected at? Are they growing at or above current market conditions? Can you rely on the accuracy of those forecasts? And then finally, and this is the key point, this is where big money is always made, where the windfall profits come in. You're looking for stocks that are going to be undergoing some type of a change, some type of an unexpected increase in earnings. We'll talk in later podcasts about looking for trends, but that's really what stock picking is all about. Those unexpected increases in earnings are so critical, because a stock today, remember, it's going to be priced on what people think it's going to be earning in the future. And if they think it's going to be earning $1, but you have reason to believe because of your research that that stock is undergoing some type of a positive trend and the earnings are not going to be $1 in the future, they're going to be $1.50. or $1.75 or $2. Well, that type of earnings surprise will cause the stock price to jump exponentially. And again, that's where the big money is made. So those are the things that you want to look for. In future podcasts, we'll focus more in on looking for those type of opportunities, being able to identify trends. And then each week we'll be looking at stocks that are talked about in the media and trying to determine whether or not they're going into a positive or a negative trend, which may affect that price again, either going up or down. These are all important things that we want to consider. Well, that wraps up our subject for today. In summary, to help you build your wealth, you want to be able to identify value. That's value in people, that's value in opportunities, that's value in property, and very importantly, that's the valuation of a stock. Take the emotion out of things. Just look at the facts, look at the current value of something, and do your best to come up with some type of a forecast as to what the future value will be. Because any premium you pay today is going to be based on that future value. And that's why it's so important to be able to identify value. Well, I thank you for joining me today on this podcast. And I invite you to come back to the next episode where we'll discuss the fifth wealth building principle, which is embracing innovation and technology. As always, if you have any comments about the podcast or any questions that you'd like to hear answered on future podcasts, please visit us at wealthsteading.com. This is John Pugliano wishing you best returns.